Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is my co-host, Fred Moreland. And Fred just got back from a fascinating trip to Denver, Colorado. Did you meet Eric Cartman?
I did not, but I did get to go to the Meow Wolf exhibit, which was cool. So, you know, we talked about doing Casa Bonita, but we decided not to. Mainly I did, because I didn't want to do, like, 4 hours of shtick to eat a mediocre meal. So...
That's the shtick is one of the reasons why growing up I never ate at Rainforest Cafe.
Yeah,
because
I don't think I've ever
food sucks.
I just never had the chance to eat at one. I really, and like, I'm not exactly hepped up about it, but you know,
I mean, the aesthetic is really cool, I'm not gonna lie, but
sure,
dog, I mean, at Mall of America, which I recommend you go if you ever come to Minnesota. It's somewhere locals like to avoid, but it is really cool because it's got, it's a spectacle, but the pretty much 3/4 of the third floor is like all restaurants, which absolutely rules, and high recommend that you give it a shout. But Rainforest Cafe is like the 30th best food that you can get at Mall of America. The only cool thing is, you're in a rainforest. Ooh.
Yeah.
They don't even miss you. It's not really that authentic. So, but yeah, the Casa Bonita would have been cool. I actually have been binging South Park, and I just watched the Casa Bonita episode. Carmen's like, Casa Bonita, awesome. They're the cliff divers. Woo. That's so cool. Like, Marzipan just looked at me like, what in the world are you doing? She's already back asleep. But yeah, it's a, yeah, I'm sure Denver was fun. Did you get to go to a Rockies game?
I did not. They were out of town, so just let down continually by sporting teams in all manner. But, yeah.
That sounds about right. But you're not here for sports talk, even though I could do sports talk for probably 6 hours. You are here for professional wrestling talk. And, Fred, we haven't been on since the pay-per-view, and I think the all-out pay-per-view itself was a very interesting show. And I think some big picture things coming out of it are going to be really fascinating to watch. And I think the main one we should talk about is Kyle Fletcher, who put on a match of the year contender against Hangman Adam Page. The continued evolution of, excuse me, what Fletcher is and will be. I think you saw he's been rising for a long time, but you saw him hit a different level that he hasn't been able to outside of against Will Ospreay. And if you can hit that with Will Ospreay, well, you're just a good wrestler, because Ospreay can hit that with a damn broomstick. But he hit it with Hangman, who is also a great wrestler, but he's not Will Ospreay. And I don't mean that as an insult. It's just Hangman is, I just see him on a slightly
Will special
rung. Yeah. Will is special. So the fact that he was able to do that with Hangman in a main event spot really showed me that you can almost flip the switch on him whenever you want, but they don't have to. They're not forced to. And they can continue this slow build. I don't think they'll do it as slow as what Wardlow was with MJF, but I don't think he wins that belt for another year and a half, 2 years. And I think once he does, it's going to be a huge moment and a huge, like, AEW is not a company that chases moments, but it'll be a big shift in where the company is going, because Fletcher, I believe, is only 26 years old. And when he wins that belt for the first time, he'll probably be 28. And all of a sudden, this is your guy for the next 5 to 7 years. And I think that's the direction we're taking. And it's cool that we saw that they could flip that switch right now and be just fine. He's like, you could argue he's 100% ready, but giving him more seasoning and a little bit more time to marinate is probably for the best. Where are you at with him?
I have him right now with my FSM ballot that I work on all year long. I have an article I need to write in the next week or so summarizing what I've been watching, but I've got him number 3 in the world right now. I got Konosuke Takeshita number 1, I got Zack Sabre Jr. 2, and I got Kyle Fletcher 3. Caveats, I am well behind on Stardom, and I'm up to, like, I think June or July now with CMLL. So, and with Bhaskar Dorada 5th, you know, it's a threat. But yeah, I mean, I just think Fletcher's having a great year, and I think that he's just obviously not just like a special talent, but he's one of the best wrestlers in the world. I think that the question was with charisma. You know, maybe his biggest, more obvious, I guess I should say, shortcoming relative to the rest of his skill set. I think he's been showing improvement in that. But, I mean, in-ring has not been a question for me for a while. I think last year I had him, let's see here, I had him reading a ballot 7th last year. And so, I mean, I think he's been a best in the world contender, 33rd the year prior. So, like, I don't think in-ring has been an issue with them. And I would point to, like, the Ospreay match was probably his highlight of the year, but I think the Adam Page one was great, of course, too. But he had a great one with Adam Page back in April on Dynamite. He had a great one with Dustin Rhodes on Collision back in July, that street fight. That was fantastic. You know, really great match, I think, on the February 8th Collision with Mark Briscoe, so on and so forth. The guy has a lot of great matches, and I think that the thing with Adam, the main event with Paige, is that the buy rate stayed strong. It felt like a weaker, you know, main event on paper, and arguably a weaker card than we've had in a bit in AEW for a pay-per-view, but the reporting Dave Meltzer's done on the buy rate is basically, was it up a little bit? I think I was out of town, but I kind of had the impression that it was about the same as usual, if not maybe up just a touch.
It was up just a touch. It was 130 to 140,000, which pretty solid, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think that we can chalk that up as noise rather than like Kyle Fletcher is actually an above average draw in AEW in the main event. But yeah, I think that he's a fantastically promising talent and one that, you know, AEW should do everything they can to keep in the orbit of the company. And, you know, not much more for me to say about him. Like, I just think he's tremendously talented, and I think he did a great job in that main event. I thought the build was good. I don't know that it was great. I think that's kind of where I am with the Hangman run so far, is that the stories, so on and so forth, have been perfectly good, you know, like enjoyable, no real issues with them, but I don't feel like there's a lot of juice with them. And, you know, I sat down and I looked at the, I just ran through Cage Match quickly before the show. But, you know, looking at TV attendances only in the US, Yeah, they've only broken 4,000 plus for a TV taping held in the United States this calendar year. And that was on July 2nd in Ontario, California, and May 14th in Chicago for Beach Break. And that's been it. Now, you can say, well, they did the 2300 Arena residency and they did the Texas residency, if I've got that place right. And I get that. That's correct. But, you know, the thing is that if they could be drawing more crowds, bigger crowds, they would be.
Mm-hmm.
And they aren't right now. This isn't to say that like Hangman is an anti-draw or something, but I think anyone who, and I'm saying this as a huge fan of Adam Page, I think he's well on his way to having a Hall of Fame career, you know, with it being Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame season. I think he's chalking up some really strong years. You know, give him a few more years, he could have a hell of a candidacy if everything goes right. But I think it's pretty fair to say that AEW is not obviously boosted by the title change from Jon Moxley to Adam Page. Now, if you were to ask me what I attribute that to, I think the company doesn't feel cold to me, but it doesn't feel hot either. It just feels like it's treading water. It's definitely recovered from the low points. I think the biggest weakness with it right now is that the creative is stayed, you know, like very, very pat. The Samoa Joe angle this week I thought was good.
It wasn't good. It was great.
I thought it was, you know,
it's pro wrestling. Like,
it was great pro wrestling, but like, I don't think that this is kickstarting a new boost in popularity for the company. It'll be a solid main event. It will do the normal buy rate. The TV ratings will stay the same and attendance will stay the same. I don't see this. And if I'm wrong, then, you know, won't be the first time, won't be the last.
Let me ask you this about this whole conversation, because I think when we're talking about the evolution of AEW and why things have stagnated, I think it comes down to one question. What has AEW done to bring back those fans that left with the Brochachos? And in turn, what have they also done to draw new people? And it's a tough one because
I'll tell you what they've done, brother. They put tweets on the screen.
Don't get me started on that shit.
No, let's get started. That sucks.
No, I hate it. They've undoubtedly appeased their own audience and done a great job of
delivering. They've shorted up
on what this current audience wanted. And I think that's great. I think that's a huge, huge thing, because I think WWE caters way too much, especially with how their commentary is, to trying to get new fans involved. And they kind of ignore some of their current fan base because they always talk like nobody's ever watched the show.
Mm-hmm.
It really caters to what their fan base is. But in turn, I don't think they've done enough to try and grow that fan base. They're not, like, if I were to look at the two companies from a complete outside perspective, and you and I, our brains are wrestling poisoned, so it's hard for us to look at things in a different light. But if you have Tim, 25-year-old, never watched wrestling, but his friends do, and he's like, you know what, I'm going to give this a try. What are you going to go toward? Are you going to go toward WWE or AEW? And this is coming from somebody who knows nothing about ball.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to veer towards AEW because of how they position themselves in the marketplace, how they've advertised themselves. Basically, it boils down to PR. WWE just has great PR, great marketing. And AEW doesn't have that. So when it comes to the booking, I think the booking is mostly good. There are some flaws. There are some, hey, why isn't this ironed up? Why is this happening instead of that? Why did we take the belt off of Toni Storm in a four-way? Like, some of the stuff is like, okay, this is a little weird, but overall the booking's mostly cohesive. how is Tim supposed to know that? Who's never watched wrestling before? What are they doing to draw new people into the buildings? The whole shtick used to be get in for $20. Like, that was great. But the problem is their TV's been so marvelously inconsistent over the course of the last few years. TV's been better. It's been more consistent, but it's not.
They've been doing a better job of teasing what's coming up on future shows. I think they need to be given credit for that.
Yes, they
need, because they never announced anything for a long time,
which was baffling. I do think Tony has something with the power of social media to create buzz, but it doesn't. The buzz online does not translate to more butts in the seats. I think if you announce like one match the afternoon of. I think you're okay, but he was announcing like 2 to 3 matches between Monday morning and showtime. You can't do that and expect people to show up blind for a product that's been so inconsistent. We talked about this on one of our last shows. Like last time they were here, I didn't go because it was too much of a pain in the butt to drive the 45 to 50 minutes and spend a bunch of money just to not be 100% sure that I love the show. Like, even if I just liked the show, it would have, that would have been fine. But I was not driven to want to go buy a ticket. I was fine just sitting at home watching.
Last time they were in Lexington, I waited till like 2 hours before showtime to buy a ticket just to like see if it was cheap. Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked about that multiple times on here. All right, let's pull up ticket prices on the Ticketmaster. Going slow. This is not going as fast as I'd hope. I think that there's a fair... Ticket prices are a weird thing, you know? Because you would think that just dropping them would easily increase attendance, but it doesn't necessarily work that way. And as we've seen with, you know, certain things, like when WWE has been hot or even outside of, outside of wrestling with concert tickets or whatever, like... There's practically no theoretical limit on what you could seemingly charge for events. If it's a big enough thing, if it's Taylor Swift or, you know, Kendrick Lamar or whatever huge concert, legends like Paul McCartney and the Stones. All right, right now it looks like that the Jacksonville Dynamite next week has a get in of $36 plus whatever fees. That's, you know, not bad. I think that's a pretty reasonable, like, get in.
You said with fees?
With fees, yeah. Oh, price includes fees before taxes, so.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's a reasonable price. Apparently, next week in Independence, Missouri, it's $35. Why is that called the Cable Dahmer Arena? Is there a company called Cable Dahmer?
Cable Dahmer. How do you spell Dahmer? Okay.
Like the serial killer. Hold on. This is a live.
I just did a search. Apparently Cable Dahmer is a new and used car dealership chain in Kansas and Missouri.
Dog. You got to change that last name.
There's three of them. There's one in Topeka. There's one in Kansas City and one in Independence.
You gotta change that surname. You gotta. Well, you can't be rolling with Dahmer on your business. I mean, granted, it's not like fresh in the mind, but damn.
Okay, so here's
that's my dopey take.
The history of Cable Dahmer. Cable Chevrolet started in Kansas City in the early 1960s, and it grew as it found ways to support automotive needs in a growing city. So it's been around for a long time.
Damn. All right. Well, I mean, so look, shout out for like being like, this is my damn name.
I think because it was already established that the locals did not really have an issue with it.
Yeah.
That's my guess. Is that right or wrong? Ah, who the hell knows? But I went back and I'm looking at, Oofta.
Oh.
I didn't even mute.
No, you didn't. This is a hell of a podcast we're on right now.
Yeah. So
thank you all for listening to our wonderful show.
Yes. We have a wonderful show for you today.
So good.
I'm sorry. It was too good to pass up. So I pulled up the last five Dynamites for attendance purposes. This past Wednesday's show was the 6th year anniversary at the Hard Rock Live at Seminole Hard Rock Hotel Casino. They did 3,659 people.
Mm-hmm. In that good number. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I believe this is according to Cage Match, this is the first time this year that anybody has ever ran the building. The last time that AEW was there was a Collision, New Year's Eve 2024. They do not have a... Oh, sorry, that's a best of.
Yeah.
So that
probably just had a match from the show.
Mm-hmm. I want to see. I'm going to be honest. Cage Match is really cool, but I hate Cage Match so much.
It's the best, and also, you know, a little bit of jank. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, because I just want to see shows at the all the shows at Hard Rock, and I can only find the ROH taping and AEW Dynamite. Anyways, I'm not going to continue that. So, 312 Dynamite 312 2 weeks ago in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, did 2,908. The prior week was September to Remember in London, Ontario. They did 3,695, mm-hmm. which that's a pretty good number. And then the previous two were at the 2300 arena, and they did 916, which that was more of Tony being a wrestling nerd and trying to get a deal than anything.
Yeah.
They're right. Not drawing a ton of people into these buildings. Now, mm-hmm. if we go back and we look at, let's look at the, AEW Dynamite the week after Grand Slam, which was a year ago today, the 5th anniversary show, also in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So we have a comp, 4,585 people. So you're looking at about 1,600 more people were at that show. You had Will Ospreay and Ricochet, Adam Page and Juice Robinson, Bryan Danielson beating Okada in a title for title match.
Yeah.
Just crazy. They have not been consistent as far as being able to keep people in seats. And I think a lot of it just has to do with their weekly television being so inconsistent. Like,
yeah,
they buried themselves so much with that MJF Brochacho stuff, and they have not found a way to bring it back out. And what really sucks is I want your take on this, Fred. I think the signings of people like Will Ospreay and Kazuchika Okada are great for pay-per-views, but they don't move television.
I think at least for the Okada, they had an opportunity to make it move television tickets and didn't pull it off.
Yeah. Now, I think it's also fair that some of the stuff with Okada, they had limitations initially. With contractual stuff, and Okada kind of fit like a glove with American television, but his matches don't translate to TV unless he's in a main event spot. So how do you use a guy like that? So like from a television perspective, is it really worth having him wrestle much on TV? That's kind of where you're sitting with him, because he is a big match wrestler. Like, the stars that they brought in aren't drawing for television, which is so weird to say, because they're big draws when it comes to pay-per-views. But then again, you could also argue that pay-per-view itself is the draw and not anything specifically. So they're just in a weird spot. And I think in order to get over that next hump, they either won... need to sign a big star from WWE, which who would you even sign at this point other than Cody? And he's not leaving anytime soon. Or you need to cultivate the next big deal. You need to cultivate a Stone Cold, a Rock, Goldberg. You need to cultivate that guy to get people to pop over and watch your product. The Death Riders, in theory, was supposed to be like, this is going to be a bad comp, but just let me finish my point. It was going to be like their NWO, where this was going to be the storyline that drew people back to television. And it started off poorly, and that never happened. I never had any like insane beliefs that they were immediately going to become the NWO, but the general construct of, hey, this is going to be the faction that draws people to our program, never manifested. It should now, because they're arguably the most interesting thing about this company. But
I will say, I think that Moxley deserves credit for helping stabilize the company again.
Well, yes. And I think the Death Rider story has objectively been very good, but I'm talking from a trying to get a television boom perspective.
Sure.
It never happened.
I think that you got to walk before you run kind of thing with that. I think that it's great to obviously you want to be like the most popular company. You want to have like the highest ratings possible, so on and so forth. But I also think that it's really hard to it's easy to say you want to be in a hot period. It's hard to make that manifest. I think you just need to have the right set of circumstances for it to happen, and you can only control so much of it. So I think being down on where AEW right now is right now in terms of popularity with especially TV attendance, I think that's the weakest indicator they have. I think being down on it is simultaneously like, yes, obviously you'd want to be higher, but I also think it's kind of a question of, okay, but you know, what should they have done differently in the past year? Like, obviously we didn't like the start of the Death Riders. We didn't like how it was kind of, we didn't like the direction it took. It kind of straightened itself out and they stuck the landing with it. Hangman Page felt like the right guy to be the guy to beat Moxley when he did. It doesn't feel like the right time to take the belt off of Hangman. It just might be that instead of, you know, immediately swinging back to a hot period, or at least as hot as you were, you know, with, you know, the tail end of CM Punk's time and all that, you might just be like at a lower, you know, level, I guess, if, for lack of a better way coming to my mind immediately to put it. You might just be at this level of popularity and not be able to go higher immediately. I think that what you need to be able to increase your popularity is solid creative as a baseline. And I think they've come a lot closer to that than they have again since maybe the start of the Death Riders run. But I do think that there's some shortcomings in that. One thing that I think they have as a weakness at this very moment is that their guys on top have been on top for a while. I don't want to make it sound like that, you know, obviously Hangman has not been a top guy since for like 15 years or something. We're not talking about an aged roster or something, but you need to constantly be producing new stars. And I feel like AEW hasn't made a new, like a real top of the card star in a bit. And I think they should maybe be thinking about doing that soon. I'm not, obviously you don't want to hotshot it, but if it's going to be Kyle Fletcher, if it's going to be like Konosuke Takeshita or someone along those lines, like I think that they need to maybe be taking more solid steps towards doing that.
And
does that follow? Like, am I off my rocker here?
I mean, you're always off your rocker.
Well, yeah. You know.
I do think that there's some merit to what you're saying, and it kind of coincides with my point too. They have to create the next star, or they have to sign the next star, and that next star isn't coming. There is no
star. There's no CM Punk. Everyone that you'd be signing that is a star has already been exposed to hell and back in AEW, or I'm sorry, WWE.
There are only two guys where I think they could potentially boom business from WWE, and neither of them are coming.
You said Cody?
I don't count Cody. Cody was never realistic. He'll come back eventually, but not for a while. I think Kevin Steen would have boosted business, because I think they would have just let Steen be Steen and go back to like what his character was in Ring of Honor back in the day. And I think that could have moved some tickets, because he's been so underutilized over in WWE. I think that could have helped. I don't think it would have made a business boom, but I think it would have boosted.
Okay.
The one guy,
I don't think it would have hurt. You can put me down with that.
I think an AJ Styles retirement tour would be a humongous draw in AEW.
Hmm.
I also don't think it's going to happen. Styles already said he was going to retire after 2026, which I think he'll be 49 years old. I think that's right.
Yeah.
But I think with the guys that he's worked with previously, and then some of the guys he could work with, even with his slightly diminished working style, I think they could have sold a ton of tickets having some kind of retirement tour for Styles. But that's it. You're like, Roman Reigns is never leaving. Like,
no.
He is like the whole bloodline thing is like half gimmick, half legit. He is related to The Rock. He's not going to go to AEW. The Usos would have been a fun ass tag team 5 years ago. No, not anymore. I don't want them anywhere near this company. Drew McIntyre, I think he'd be a good asset to the mid card, but I don't think you're pushing him. Like, what else do you have over there? Like, there's the whole idea, oh, Sheamus would be great in a G1. Yeah, he would be. He just resigned.
I don't think he'd hold up in a G1 anymore.
No. He's what, 47 now? He's sneaky old.
He is. He's up there.
But that's the point. Like, what do they have that could be a business boom for AEW? It's incredibly minimal. Now, I still think there's money in a Punk return, but I don't think
that'd be a hard sell in that locker room. I think
it'd be a major hard sell. Yeah. If you could sell the Bucks, I think you could sell everybody else.
Yeah, I think that'd be the biggest issue. I think that Omega, I mean, it sounded like, you know, previously that Omega would have been okay working with them after Brawl Out, but I wonder how much of that would have changed after, you know, the whole thing with the Jack Perry incident and just, you know, Mount Phil going full Mount Phil, you know. I think that one guy you didn't mention that I do think they could possibly elevate to another level to a point where it'd be meaningfully drawing is Gunter/Walter. I think he's fresh enough where like him jumping would mean a lot. The second name that I thought of is actually Sami Zayn. Now I have the same hesitancy with Kevin Steen Owens in that I think they're both up there. They both have been through a lot of wars, even in a company that usually doesn't let them isn't usually its high impact or whatever terminology you want to use. But I think that they've managed to stick to higher impact stuff in that company relative to the field. I just think that Zayn had that little pop. He's had more of a higher level drawing, I feel like, than, you know, with the bloodline stuff than Owens ever did. Is that replicable? If you like, just go all gas with them. I don't know. I feel like it's not the safest bet, but like, I don't think, again, I don't think it'd be a disaster by any stretch, but like, I don't know, man. It feels like right now we had that period of wrestler movement where where, you know, there were a fair number of cast-offs or unhappy people in WWE that AEW got back around 2020, 2021. And now it's just been kind of quieter the past couple of years. I'm going to use this as a segue to talk about Andrade, but I do want to mention one or two more things with the pay-per-view, which is just that MJF Mark Briscoe match was fantastic. I wanted to specifically mention that.
Can we just shout out how great MJF was going from doing a Bloody Mask match in Mexico to
Need to watch that. I still have not caught that.
Literally over the United States to Toronto, and then doing that match with Mark Briscoe.
I thought this was a hell of a show, frankly. I don't know if there's any like match of the year contenders on there for me. I just think Paige Fletcher was a touch short because it was too long. As I pop myself with unintentional wordplay, but I think that Briscoe MJF was fantastic. I really liked the unified title, triple, you know, three-way dance, whatever you want to call it. Darby Moxley in that coffin match was crazy. And, you know, I get people who are burnt out on ladder matches, but I do think that tag ladder match was really good.
It was. Just don't do them for a couple of years, please.
Yeah, it'd be nice to space them out more, but I just think it's impossible at this point. All right, so if I may borrow someone's Hilljack introduction of him that I saw again, Andre El Idolo, and Kevin Kelly, I can call that Hilljack. I got the credentials. Yeah, Andrade's back, which is, I think, a bit of a surprise, frankly. Mainly because it felt like there's always something going on with him. Negative backstage at AEW. He, you know, kind of got lumped in to that, like, we came over from WWE and now we're in AEW. And we are now familiar with the phrase, "That doesn't work for me, brother." Like, you know, the trio that kind of was Andrade, Miro, and Malakai Black. Andrade gets cut. Immediately, WWE puts out the, it was wellness related after they haven't announced, publicly announced, like, a wellness suspension in a long time. So it's fair to question, like, how much of it was it actually a wellness related release, or was it just like a PR hit on Andrade's way out? But ignoring even that, like, I don't know about this move, man. I'm kind of hesitant on bringing Andrade back in. I think that you've got so much talent on this roster that the competition for spaces is really tight. And I'm not sure that Andrade is a better option than people like you already had kind of languishing on the card that you might have been able to use as opportunity to promote.
So I'm going to go with two different angles to be a devil's advocate. One, Andrade looked cool as absolute fuck with the Don Callis family. He looked awesome.
He always looks cool.
Yeah.
And he's not a bad worker. I'm not saying he's not valuable, that he's not talented.
I'm not. Trying to
figure out that
he's going to be this five-star worker. You're not going to get La Sombra versus Atlantis mass match.
No.
You're not getting that.
Or the Nakamura match or Gargano.
Yeah, I know. That Gargano match still. Like, Gargano, I could
go back and watch that.
But yeah, I kind of want to go back and watch it. That match was phenomenal. But two, he's in a role that I don't think anybody in AEW on the current roster could or should play. He's basically just the new Wardlow. He's going to be the muscle. He's going to be a guy in tags, and he's not going to get this super push. So I think this hand-wringing over the fact, Andrade, I think Andrade knows he can't fuck up again because he just got kicked out of WWE, and he wasn't even a cost-cutting move. He got kicked out. He got fired.
Yeah.
They're not bringing him back. He's not a good enough star to warrant bringing back. Like, if this was, like, we just saw Brock Lesnar still moves tickets. He still moves money. So even though he was mentioned as in the Janelle Grant lawsuit multiple times for partaking or almost partaking in alleged conduct, they still said, well, we're going to bring him back because he moves business. That's not Andrade. So I think he's going to be on his best behavior. How long that lasts, or will he? We'll see. But I think bringing him back in this role makes a ton of sense. He looks the part. And I don't know if anybody else on this roster gives you that. So, like, Wardlow gave you that, even though we have our own qualms with Wardlow. But you're not putting, like, a JD Drake in that spot. You're not going to bring over Big
Dog.
You already have the tall guy. This is, like, your security muscle. Like, Andrade looks like that. So I think it's great. And we're obviously going toward Takeshita, maybe Kyle Fletcher, both being kicked out of Don Callis' family. So this is an extra
body. Takeshita sooner.
Yes, 100%. But he's just a body. And
yeah, I mean, sure, he's a body, but like that's the thing. That's why I don't know that you needed to sign him, because I'm just going to give you some names right now, and you know, that you could have plugged in this spot instead. Like, what if instead you put Ace Austin in this spot? You know,
no, it doesn't work.
Really,
is he a muscle guy like that? I don't see him like that. Like, Andrade looks like he's an ass-kicking security guard who's going to beat you up. And to me, that's the role.
Oh, maybe we get Ace Austin, some chicken breasts and some broccoli.
That is not a slight to Ace Austin. I think I kind of like him going with the Bang Bang Gang for right now, because they're baby faces. And we'll see how that works. But I got to tell you, I don't see anybody on that roster fitting better for the role than what Andrade is.
But I'm scrolling.
You said
I'm
more names.
I'm scrolling. Hold on. I'm playing the roster game. You know, playoff, the wrestling version of the schedule game. I mean, Buddy Matthews would be a good one, actually, but he's apparently still injured.
Didn't he break his ankle?
I forget what he did. It sounds right. It was an ankle. I just can't remember exactly what it was. Like, surely, you know, you could find somebody else in this spot as I say this, and I put myself out further on this take. Maybe not. I mean, if you're just like fixated on like on muscle guy, you know,
I think they just put him in the Wardlow role. I think that's what it is. It's just a 1-to-1 replacement. That's my vibe on it. And you know what my guess would be? Andrade probably wouldn't have been signed if Wardlow wasn't hurt.
I don't know about that. That seems a little...
Maybe. That's my vibe on it, and that's all it is. I'm not sourcing any material here.
No, sure, yeah. May I interest you in a Danhausen? Hello?
Danhausen. Oh, hello? That would be fun.
No, not serious. Boy, that went sideways, huh? I mean, you could have had Roderick Strong turn and join him, I guess, or hell. I just think you could have found someone on this roster or someone on the indies to fill the spot instead. And, you know, like, there's probably a couple guys on the come up that you could have used instead. And I don't know. I just don't think it's going to be worth it. I think there's going to be more silliness, and you know, we're just going to kind of not learn a single thing.
Yeah, we'll see. If Andrade works out, I think it could be a really nice hire. And he's a guy, like, especially with the Don Callis family, he can just be in TV matches and get beat like a drum, and you don't really have to worry that much about it.
Yeah.
Like, Rocky is too busy to do a bunch of matches because he's got so many backstage roles. I don't know if he officially has one with CMLL, but I know he's the liaison for both AEW and New Japan. So,
well, why not Lance Archer? He's already in the group.
Oh, are you kidding? We've wanted Lance Archer to get more matches for years. Yeah. It hasn't happened. That won't happen.
Well, this could have been it.
It could have been, but it was never going to be.
It could have been. I feel good in this. They should have, you know, they should have done this. Anyways. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they're going to get burnt again. And, you know, Andrade is going to realize in 2 months that, you know, he doesn't respect this company or whatever really caused all that. And we're just going to go back to the same thing as always.
Yep. But continuing to talk about some of the back ends of the show, Fred, Nielsen is changing how they're doing ratings. And I think that could be really interesting for how it impacts wrestling in particular, because it's going to be counting in a different format, I want to say.
Might be bad.
Walk us through it.
All right. So this isn't like fully in depth. I would not be shocked if like I missed a flagship breaking this down better or something, or I'm sure Meltzer has dive deep into this and I haven't been able to catch it yet. I'm still catching up on actual work from Vacation. So basically, previously they were just doing like the panel ratings, and the NFL in particular pushed for them to add basically what they're calling panel and big data. And Programming Insider, which is basically what all the news sites, wrestling news sites, use now for their numbers, has switched to panel and big data. Everything else Dave Meltzer gets is panel only, just as an example. So the transition is happening. It is slower to get these numbers out with the panel plus big data format. It takes like a day longer. So you're going to see that going forward. Meltzer talked about how he thinks it's going to end up hurting wrestling. Sports have been boosted by it, generally speaking. But Raw just did its all-time low number from this past Monday. And I think that that's been pretty low numbers for other wrestling shows as well. So the thing right now is it's just really basically impossible to tell more than ever who's watching what. I'm not saying you can't do it at all, but I think everyone's confidence in the system is lower than ever. The reliability of it has been hurt dramatically by the streaming era, and especially with that being the kind of the default of how younger people tend to watch media. And it's just, it's going to be interesting. I think that it is possible that this is going to permanently drop wrestling ratings. But on top of that, you have all the, like, well, how many people are actually watching on Netflix? We get the top 10 stuff. But, like, outside of that, it's pretty limited info. Apparently, Tony Khan doesn't even get HBO Max numbers. So how the hell are we going to get it? It's just going to be a lot of, like, black boxes. And this is supposed to help combat that some, but I feel like it might just be yet another black box. And some people are going to like it because it say number go up, and some people are going to hate it because it said number go down. So,
look, the bad faithers are going to bad faith any number that comes out.
Oh, sure. You could always crap on a number, you know. Yeah, but
I saw Raj Giri try to spin NXT being down because, oh, it's one of their higher numbers in recent weeks because he's a clown. But for me, I love television ratings because I actually like to look into the minutiae of it. I like to look into like details and trends, and I don't overreact to a single number. I want to find out the why.
Yeah.
To me, it's interesting, which is also kind of like, we don't really talk about ratings that much because so much of television is evolving. But I do think it's fun to parse out on a long-term kind of schedule. And I think this edition is going to be really fun to look at from that perspective. So I'm kind of excited about it. I'm not excited about the discourse. I'm excited to just be a nerd and pay attention.
Yeah. But the frustrating part is just going to be the whole, like, can we, you know, like, which number is real? How accurate is the new system and all that? So I guess we'll see. I do think that, you know, if everything just switches over to the new system, we're going to be like, it's going to be a few months before you can really get a good vibe on what they mean. So it's going to be interesting. That's, you know, in all the different ways, interesting has meanings.
Yeah. That's about it there. I'm intrigued, and I think it's going to be fun to watch over the course of time. But
sure,
single numbers, I could care less.
Yeah. A couple more news notes. Sari came in to work Ring of Honor. Cool. You have maybe the single best woman wrestler in the world, and you put her on the Steeze show. Okay. That kind of stinks. Blood and Guts is announced for November 12th, so we're getting a nice long build for that. Right now they've only announced that there's going to be a women's match. I don't know if they're going to pair a men's with it. I frankly hope not. The whole, like, we have a gimmick match, so we have to do one for the men and one for the women on the exact same show kills me because of the exact same show. Like, you got this unique gimmick. You can't be doing two of them on the same show. Gail Kim, I missed most of the story. I don't know if you're keeping up with it, but basically it started with her complaining about how Riho is unbelievable in the ring on offense because of her size. Gail Kim, I don't believe, is much bigger than Riho. Remember how she had that classic series of matches with Awesome Kong? Just gonna say that. And then I guess it spiraled into her accusing, like, Riho of being sexualized in a pedophilic manner or something when she's, like, 32 or something. I don't know. Or however old. You could tell me Riho is any age up to, like, 48 or something. I'd be like, yeah, sure. 28. God bless. That's ridiculous. And then it spun into, like, full grifter AEW fans or monsters. Dave Meltzer is being paid off by Tony Khan. It's just insanity. And I'm going to be honest, I did not want to come back from vacation and spend hours poring over stupid texts or stupid tweets like this. So
I have nothing to say other than I think Gail Kim was trying to make a fair and valid point, and she botched it.
I'll add two things I saw, neither of which I confirmed. So if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and I apologize. Apparently, the second day, because this was multiple days and is still apparently going on, the second day was on the birthday of her husband. This is kind of funny. And did BJ Bethel not report that that apparently Gail Kim recently reached out to AEW for a job and was turned down or did not hear back or something along those lines?
Yes.
Okay, that's it. Silly story. Just dumb and stuff. And then did we go through the attendance data I pulled of breaking 4,000?
I talked about the last five, but I'm going to be honest. For some reason, I completely missed the what you had in the show notes because okay. I am good at this.
Well, basically, I went back and I looked. I was curious as to the last times that TV, and I think I mentioned a little bit this already in the show, but the last times an AEW TV taping in the U.S. broke 4,000. It's only happened twice this calendar year, July 2nd for the 300 Dynamite in Ontario, California, May 14th for Chicago's Beach Break, and that's been it. You have to go back to November 27th for, once again, Chicago for Thanksgiving Eve, where they had 4,700. October 2nd last year, 5th anniversary show in Pittsburgh had 4,585, and then Grand Slam last year, and I think it was New York, with 8,834. And that's it. Actually, I'm going to check myself here, doing a little typing on Mike, the best stuff. Yeah, that was still Arthur Ashe. I don't know. I know that, like, you know, but I've already kind of covered this with my take on Hangman. Basically, I think he's doing fine, but he's not doing great as a draw. That isn't to say
he's not elevating. He's
keeping it stable.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I mean, if you're not, if you can't go up, at least stay solid. And that's been kind of the story of AW for most of the past 7 or so months is they aren't really going up, but they're staying steady. And of the options, that is not the worst one. You'd like it to go up. It just isn't there. I think, I'm not hog wild about how I thought the MJF storyline was set up pretty well. I thought the Fletcher thing felt like kind of a challenger of the month thing. Now, I think Fletcher did well in it. No knock on him or anything. I just think that it wasn't the strongest setup, and we just basically started the Samoa Joe storyline. So I can't really comment on it, but it was kind of a subtle start, so we'll see. You know, if it, you know, how it does. I did like the angle with Samoa Joe in that it was slightly more subtle. Now, again, I haven't had time to listen to the Observer Radio, so I saw someone say, don't know if it's true, saw someone say that Brian Alvarez may have said, like, complain about it not being a story for Samoa Joe being the next challenger when they literally did 3 segments on the same show setting up. Again, I haven't gone and confirmed that that's the case or not. If he is, then I just, very silly. But I liked how they set it up. They had the thing in the ring, the Samoa Joe feeling disrespected. We had a nice little promo from Paige challenging him, and then Samoa Joe accepting the challenge and trashing Paige. And I liked it. I thought it was a good start, and I'm interested to see where it goes from here.
Me too, man.
Otherwise, I thought it was a pretty good, like a 7.5 out of 10 level TV show overall. The opener I thought was the best match, the multi-man tag. The Andrade return was, it was done well. And again, I'm never going to say that like Andrade sucks or anything. I just question, given the history, if it's the best idea to bring him back. But, you know. And yeah, that's, I mean, trying to think even of what else was on the show at this point. My brain is turning to mush.
Dog, my brain is already mush.
I thought the Orange Cassidy match with Fletcher was pretty good.
What do you think about beating Orange Cassidy this quickly? I love that.
You know, if you're going to put this match together, I think Fletcher has to win it.
Which is why you shouldn't have put it together.
That's fair. That's fair.
They were kind of put between a rock and a hard place with the hologram injury. So
yeah, that didn't help.
Do we know what that injury is, by the way?
I thought it was a knee once again.
Okay, that sucks.
Yeah, and it is concerning. I thought, I don't, you know, I think maybe we just need to let Tame Mello walk. I think that she and, you know, other people from that era don't hold up right now on the women's scene.
It's really unfortunate because I thought they, and I'm not going to blame her having a baby for performance right now, but I did think before she left because she became pregnant, I thought maybe they had something with her, where I thought she could have become a solid mid-carder who had the occasional title challenge. I never thought she was going to become like one of the biggest stars in the division, but some of her stuff is good. It's just incredibly inconsistent. Her striking looks great. She's a decent athlete, but she can barely run the ropes, which is just wild.
Yeah, it's not good.
Sometimes it's like she's moving in slow motion with spots, and it's like, all right, dog, come on. But her plunder stuff has been great. I don't know if they've officially announced the women's blood and guts match and who the participants are.
I don't think they have announced who, but
I hope she's in it because I think she could be really good in it. It could also go disastrous. Who knows?
Yeah, I think that, you know, probably the best match he was ever in was like a hardcore match. If I recall correctly, it was a tag with Anna Jay, right? Or something like that. Was I smart enough to keep her cage match profile open? No, I was not. blah, 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 doing the schedule thing game again. There's like apparently a Shida. It was that tag against the street fight against Penelope Ford and the bunny, which like punched way above its weight. And then there was another Anna and Tay against Ruby Soho and Willow Nightingale street fight. And the thing with those matches is you really typically don't have to run the ropes. So maybe we just think smarter, you know, about how to do in-ring stuff with, you know, someone like her. That's just my take. That's just where it is, I guess. But I feel like the women's division for AEW has fortunately gotten a lot better in the past 2 years, and now is just kind of. But it's really tough if you were from the earlier, you know, group, and where do you fit in? Like, I would worry about where Ruby Riott fits in if she were to return today. Just from an in-ring standpoint, or even a charisma standpoint, because, you know, someone like Harley Cameron, who, you know, isn't the best in the ring, is rapidly learning, it seems like, has so much charisma. So maybe they can. It's just going to be tough, I think, for people that have been out a while to come back and catch up. Like, even Britt Baker. Britt, I think my assessment of her would be that she's just really up and down in the ring, mm-hmm. and up and down in promos. And that lack of consistency is really tough when you've got Toni Storm and Jamie Hayter and Mercedes Moné and Alex Windsor and all this talent, you know, even up and comers like Tekla. Yeah, I did it right that time. And Queen Aminata. It's, you know, it's tough. It's just tough. And maybe, I don't know if Britt's done. If, you know, there's some, she like updated her location on Twitter to Orlando, I think, or something, which, okay, maybe she's leaving. Finally, maybe she isn't. Maybe she's staying. I don't know. I think that having a huge reaction to someone changing their location on Twitter is just not what I'm going to do. So, but I do feel like that would be another what if. I think the lack of improvement in some of the early women's wrestlers is unfortunate. And
yeah, it does suck. But it's not like they didn't try.
No, right. They tried really hard. And the promotion and the women, I think, tried really hard. So,
yeah. Well, Fred, I'm excited about this Blood and Guts match.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I do want to add real quick one last thing, which is Blake Christian's little like backwards tope thing that he does between the ropes.
Yeah.
Is sick. Like, that's, dude, I just wanted to specifically mention that. It's such a great move. I don't know. I think he and Lee Johnson are a very intriguing tag team. I think they both have upside. I'm curious. Dog,
calling themselves Swirl is so funny.
I don't know that I hate it, but it's not a great name. I'm not going to like do a Joe Lanza rant about it because I don't think it's that bad of a name. It's not like Ichiban Sweet Boys, where I think he kind of has a point.
It's not but like, bad, but
I don't think it's bad.
It's so little, on the nose.
It's a little dopey because of that, yeah. Very important news that I forgot to put in the show notes that we should mention before we go, which is Big Boom AJ is returning to AEW. To Full Gear. They're going to be on the Full Gear card. They're cool. In the first match to announce for it, I guess.
You know what?
RPG Vice against Big Boom AJ and a partner of his choosing.
I think they have done such a great job of using Big Boom AJ and Big Justice. It's inoffensive. It's always on the pre-show. And like they're just solid between 3 and 4-star matches.
Four-star.
I mean,
tap them.
Hold on. I never said they got a four-star match. I'm you saying said
three, they're having 3 to 4 star. You can't be saying that.
I said brother. Between. They're in that range, is what I'm saying.
That implies inclusive.
If you want to go to three,
that
three,
implies
four,
inclusive. Ah.
You know what, Fred? I'm gonna come down to Kentucky. I'm gonna whip your ass.
All right, let's do
but
it.
I think one of the more intriguing things about this is I think he promotes the show as good as anybody on the roster when he talks to the media.
Oh, yeah, he's good at the media stuff. I don't know that he moves the needle whatsoever, but I mean...
I couldn't tell you any kind of tangential data that says that he moves the needle, but yeah. He's a classically trained wrestler. The angles that they do are just fine. They're inoffensive, good matches. They never hit anywhere close to great. But it's the last match on the pre-show, and everybody has a good time. They also space these out. They're like 2 to 3 times a year.
Yeah, perfect. He's probably getting paid way too much, but I mean, it's not my money, so
who cares? Like, give me that guy's agent.
I will note that the second autocomplete thing when I type in Big Boom AJ to Google is Big Boom AJ dead. Not great. Not great. anyways, that's it. I don't know that I have anything else for the show this week. You got anything you want to mention?
No, I'm going to go buy a steak.
Sounds good.
It sounds great. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back at a undisclosed time because we're a little bit more sporadic now. Feels like we're hitting a good rhythm again, which has been really nice after the kind of struggle summer.
Yeah.
And we'll be back. Give us a 5-star review. Subscribe to this podcast and the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. And we will see you next time.
Take care, everyone.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.